everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
I'm Dane, the Humpty Dumpty head.
Two-Headed Game Master is oh, what's that there?
Ooh.
It seems we've grown a third head for the first time in a while. Who do we got here?
I'm Brian. I'm the Professor Plum head.
Okay, I don't get that one.
Oh, come on. That means we drink.
Should have been the Tim Curry head.
Oh,
that's good.
I haven't played Clue since like 2011 or whatever.
Humble brag. I don't get the Humpty Dumpty one. I'm going to drink for that.
Because he's hard boiled.
All right, that's pretty good.
Well, he could be.
Notoriously, he's not.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, well, because he wouldn't have busted like that. But but he is an egg. How many other eggs named egg characters?
For a dollar, name another egg.
Yeah, for a dollar, name an egg. Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. And this is a special one, because we have a longtime friend of the show and sometimes guest, Brian, with us here again this evening.
Pleased as punch to be here.
To discuss mysteries in...
Murder mysteries.
Yeah, well... Primarily, yeah, the concept of like a murder mystery, whodunit, and how to run that as a role-playing adventure or session. If it's a one-shot, or maybe it's strung out over multiple sessions, we'll figure out what we're talking about when we start, I guess.
What are we talking about today, Dave?
When are we starting? Oh, we're live right now? Yeah, so I think we should start with just our experiences running murder mysteries or mysteries in tabletop role-playing games. I'll go first.
Okay.
I've run a couple mysteries, specifically one murder mystery way back in the Torg days, and it did not go so good.
If you're a old head who actually played Torg, but also are unfamiliar with our podcast, we don't mean in like the late 80s when Torg was a thing. We mean in the in the 20 teens when we first started and Torg was the first thing that we picked up. And yeah, there was a Torg adventure where a crime had been committed and we were expected to solve it.
What was the crime?
Murder.
Ah. Well, that's appropriate for what we're talking about.
Not only murder, is also a frame job.
Ooh.
So, yeah, it had nothing... Its failure had nothing to do with Torg rule set. It had to do with inexperience, game mastering in general, but then also inexperience with running mysteries. Because it basically boiled... down.
Hey, okay. I get
to,
it.
Detective talk.
I like made the clue board, you know, and like connected all the little yarn lines to all these clues, and the players found exactly zero of them. Because it was like, you walk into the room, roll a perception. Okay, well, you don't get that clue, and you don't get that clue. So I guess you don't see anything important in this room. And then it's like, how do you expect your players to solve a mystery if you don't give them any clues?
It's tough. It's tough to do.
It's tough to do.
Yeah. I ran recently a one-shot that was a murder mystery. The basically crux of it was a captain hired a bunch of people for to go recover a treasure that he had originally tried to get himself, but his crew mysteriously died. And sort of the murders happened on the ship right back after getting the treasure. So they're contained on this ship. And the like twist at the end was that the captain himself was cursed and was like the monster at the end who had been murdering everybody. And it went okay. But I think I kind of boxed myself in a way that didn't allow me to like pivot when it would have been better to have done so.
Pivot to something... Pivot to not the answer to the mystery
yeah.
as originally written.
Well, unlike Dane's, they did find clues because I didn't have them behind rolls. But they kind of put together these clues of like this like really interesting love triangle. And I was like, fuck, I should have done that. That would have been really good. But one of my players was playing the captain who turned into the big bad at the end. So it had to be him. And we were playing in a pool. So it just got to a point in the like afternoon where we're all hungry. And I was like, okay, he's attacking me now. And it's time.
You solved it.
You solved it. Good
he
job.
He attacks you.
It was him the whole time, like you knew. Went for initiative.
Okay. I've never explicitly ran a murder mystery. The closest thing to it that I've ever done is like some horror stuff where you didn't know what was happening until you had to have some things happen to you and do a little investigating. But I guess, so out of this, out of the two things that you guys just talked about that you had done previously, the big thing, the big difference that I heard is one thing had clues and critical information behind roles, which turned into a problem, and one didn't. And I think, so we all probably, if you've done any game mastering, you understand the idea of like, make a roll and you either get it or you don't. So Brian, I guess, what was your approach to not doing that as far as the clues?
So I had him on this ship and I like had the whole ship mapped out in like the different levels. And basically there were different parts of the ship they could go to. And when they went in the room, if at any point anybody was like, well, I'm going to look around the room. I'd have them roll because they just got real excited about rolling or whatever. So whoever was looking, I rolled, and whoever rolled highest would find the thing or
yeah.
whatever, right? So like
but not hidden behind a difficulty.
No. More just to be like, hey, you rolled better than them, so you get the clue or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so finding those clues and talking to different people, like a same thing, like they would talk to like a crew member and like it wasn't based on like how well they persuaded them or whatever. It was more about like if they just talked to them long enough, that crew member would sort of reveal something about like the situation on the ship.
And what system was this?
I ran it in D&D 5e. We might have been playing some parts of the new 5e. I'm not well versed in that, so.
As an aside, is like I can't tell the difference when I hear people talking about it on YouTube. They're like, "Oh, we, you know, it's changed this to this," and I feel like it's very easy to not know which one you're doing.
Yeah.
To be like, yeah, we're running 5e, and like, oh, wait, is that a, depending on what you check, that's a 2024 rule, or that's
yeah.
a 5e original?
And there are some, like, class abilities and race, well, they don't call it races anymore, like...
Species
abilities, that really, again, didn't play a big part in it.
Well, yeah, because that was going to be my question, is how did you feel the system of D&D work with a mystery setting, because my conception of D&D is a lot of the like character specific abilities, like, oh, I have this class and I chose this and this feat and whatever. They don't give you anything. It's all like combat based.
Yes.
You know, they don't give you bonuses for perception rolls or, well, yeah. They don't give you, oh, if I notice this, I can like see who touched it last or whatever.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, there wasn't a lot of use of, like, each individual's sort of, like,
action
abilities.
Economy.
Yeah, exactly. And there was a combat early on, and then there wasn't a combat until the end. So the mystery itself was sort of, like, D&D, it wasn't, in that case, like, a good system to use for it. But the person I was running it for... is excited to play D&D, so we played
mm-hmm.
D&D, which was fine. I know there are other systems out there that I've like not played personally, but like listened to that like Call of Cthulhu seems like one where like
yeah, it's designed for that sort of
for sure.
If I may put it on the board, D&D does not make a mystery pop.
That's good. That's good.
Same with Torg. A little bit different in the way that, like, Torg didn't have, like, class-specific abilities and junk like that. But basically what it came down to, a mystery comes down to, is, like, investigation, perception. How well do you talk to people? Like, how can you persuade them to give you the information? All very singular roles where it's not really... There's not a lot of fun mechanic-wise for a mystery. It's all kind of just the same thing. Just give me a roll for perception. Give me a roll for talking to the guy.
Yeah.
Give me a charm.
So you could then, you know, get a bunch of bards together on a ship to, like, solve a mystery, right? Or, like, a few bards and, like, a few wizards or whatever. And I think their proficiencies and bonuses would be enough to, like, be stacked in terms of, like, charisma and investigation or whatever. But... I read a blog by a guy named, I think it's like Alexander or something. I was going to pull up my phone and I didn't. But it was back in like 2008. That basically said, like, if you're going to do that, you need to have three ways for each clue to be found. Because like you said, Dane, like, they just will not find them otherwise, right? And I'm a really lazy DM. So another blog I read by a different guy who I also didn't pull up on the phone said to just sort of give them clues and then, like, kind of let the mystery unfold through them, right? Rather than you sort of, like, spoon-feeding them clues or whatever.
I think that is definitely the latter thing you said, is a better way to run a mystery in systems that don't have a lot of pop for mysteries. Because... Yeah, you like, yo, here's a piece of information, players, and you put the pieces together.
Right.
Like,
it seems like that's, like, if you walk into a room and there's a clue, part of describing the room should be, like, and you find this clue.
Yeah.
And the clue is a clue. The clue is, you know, the clue is a prompt to go follow up on something else.
That's right.
You know? It's the clue is a question that, like, points you in a direction, not clues can mean a lot of different things depending on, you know, like, if you're talking about real investigative work or the rules of different shows or whatever. Like, the clue shouldn't be like a knife with a fingerprint on it, and you know that this fingerprint matches this guy, right?
Yeah.
That's too much information, but, like, a knife.
So, like, the fingerprint kind of gets to, like, more of a video game jigsaw puzzle where you need all the pieces of the puzzle to reveal the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in, like, a tabletop role-playing game, I think we're saying it's more of put up the clues on the corkboard and draw the little felt or the yarn line to whatever, you know, the players think makes sense. And they're like, ooh, the knife makes sense for the guy who uses a lot of knives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Right?
And also, this just made me think of something else. In real investigative work, in real life, you know, a murder case, right? Then, like, finding a knife with blood on it, and you're like, well, that blood is probably the victim's or the perpetrator's.
Yeah.
And there's probably a fingerprint on it too. So this clue is a thing that now we take to a lab.
Right.
And then the lab is going to see if you get matches on the blood and see if the fingerprint pulls up a match from any database. And then, you know, maybe you get two people and one of them is the dead guy. You're like, okay, the other guy, suspect. And then the procedural part of then finding that guy isn't very like mystery solving. It's just like procedural busy work. We have this guy.
Yeah.
We have this guy that, you know, we don't know he did it, but the evidence points to this guy. So let's go find this guy and then do the, you know, do the interview, do the examination of his
groundwork.
Yeah. And that sort of real life investigative procedure, I feel like doesn't play very well.
Sure. Unless you're rolling to see if, like, the forensic scientist, like, came in hungover that day and, like...
Right.
So the fingerprint read might not be that good or whatever.
Because in that real life investigation, you would be turning it over to a different professional.
Sure.
Who is then going to do their job.
Sure.
And then check it against the computer and see if, like, a name pops up. And be like, yep, this partial fingerprint matches this guy. And they live here, and here are some contacts.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you go do that based on that. But in playing an investigative session, the clue kind of has to... It has to do some more of that for you while also not being, like, the answer, right? The clue has to point you in a direction without you having to, like, take it somewhere else.
Well,
or not necessarily, I guess. Like, you know, maybe you take it to a wizard and get some sort of... Get like, a seance off of it for vibes. And then that's how you get your... That's how you get your next lead. But I feel like that disconnect is something that players aren't... I guess this is what I'm getting at. The disconnect between, you know, here is a clue, but it's not telling us anything. Mm-hmm. We need to do another thing to make it tell us something. Your players, I think, very often will not know what the next step is at that point, unless the clue is a little bit more of like a direct arrow towards something.
Can I put some on the board?
Yeah.
Is that allowed?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Put this one on the board. Cosmo, you said something that really made my brain itchy, which is, I'm summarizing, but basically, like, clues can be hooks,
mm-hmm.
right? Like how we write hooks in our regular adventures of, like,
yeah,
this is the thing that will entice them to go do the thing that I want.
Mm-hmm.
And like a clue should be a hook to go do the next interesting thing, right? So like, oh, okay, we found this guy's boot at the scene of the crime.
Right.
Fuck, we should go talk to the guy who's missing a boot. Like, let's go see if we can find somebody or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Can we go, like, okay, who's not got a boot?
Yeah, right.
Let's stake out the town square and see if anyone's walking around with no boot.
Yeah.
Oh, everyone's got all their boots. Well, who's got new boots?
Right.
You know.
And then there's one-legged Larry. And
let's talk to the boot guy. Mm-hmm. Let's go talk to the boot
Right,
shop.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's really great because then you got three things. You're looking for, like, you know, who's missing a boot? Who's got brand new boots,
yeah.
or who never had a second boot in the first place that, you know, and you got three things to check.
Yep.
And then those three things, like, by talking to all three of them, because, like, two of them are going to have legit alibis,
mm-hmm.
probably. You might have to check on them, but one of them is going to have a lie for their alibi. And by following up on the other two... Like, you should be able to find out by following up which one is the wrong one, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, if then you go... Kind of like what you said about the blog who said there should be three ways to find a clue.
Yeah.
We kind of glossed over that and said, like, if you walk in a room and there's a clue to find and you say, I search for clues, give them the fucking clue.
Yeah.
And there's a few different ways you can narrate how they find it, but... In general, I think we're all kind of in agreement that, like, if there's a clue to find and they go to the place, they should probably get it and it shouldn't be hidden behind a dice roll.
But here's what I bumped up against with that.
Okay.
Have you guys ever done, like, a murder mystery party? I know you have.
I've done one with you.
Holy shit. I got to a point writing it where I was just like, how is this not that? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the dice somehow
How
make
is this
it,
not just, like, everyone yelling and accusing everybody?
Or just, like, it's now it's ceased to be, like, a TTRPG, and now it's just sort of a murder mystery part, which also is very fun.
Yeah.
But the lines felt very blurry. And, yeah, right. And I guess, like, maybe, like, combat and, like, you know, if I had more time, like, a skill challenge or something could have been.
Yeah.
Could have been something that, like... regrounded it in the game aspect of it, but focusing solely on the mystery and removing dice rolls sort of made it feel like, well, this is now just a murder mystery party.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there should be some way, or there is a way. You gotta gamify it. You gotta gamify it back up, right? So, like, One way is, like, hold on, I'm cooking while I'm talking here. So the...
It smells good.
Something that's...
Eating while you're stuck cooking.
Later is...
He's got a block of cheese next to him.
The reason why, like, the players are solving the mystery in the first place, right? Because, like, why not just hand it off to the city guard or the cops or whatever, right? So, like, why are they investigating this murder? Yeah. Right, probably because they're involved, or they shouldn't be investigating this murder. Right, they're doing it because they don't trust the cops or whatever.
Which is
right? So they got to sneak around.
Pretty fundamental to like the private investigator genre of storytelling is like you either can't trust the cops, they're incompetent, they might be in on it, or like they don't care. They've already decided it was an accident, but you know it's not because you know something.
Right. So like
you gotta have a reason to be involved.
For your frame job, they've got somebody already, right?
Yeah. And you gotta prove their innocence. Right. That was it.
That was it. We had to save somebody.
Yeah.
And you had to order to save them, we had to solve the thing and prove their innocence.
You had to find the real killer.
Mm-hmm. Fuck, I didn't know you guys already did that.
Well, I mean, we didn't. We boofed it. It wasn't great. We boofed it and we left town.
Yeah, they did not find the real killer. And they ended up breaking the accused out of jail, and they all went into hiding and left town.
Sure. And that's
which was a solve.
Yeah.
As far as like, well, now we can play the next session of this, which I don't think we end up. I don't think we even ended up doing. I think that might have been the end of that line.
Unraveling of the of the tour campaign.
But it's a way out of that situation.
Yeah.
But it could have gone down better.
And that did suck, because I think we could all tell at the table that that was not your intent.
Yeah.
There was a mystery to be solved, and we weren't making any progress in it. But we were like, well, we did a little bit of lateral thinking. We're like, we could just not and try and get him out. And you kind of just allowed us to do that instead.
That makes me curious, like, because I've never played one in a TTRPG setting. Like, what feels best for the player? Like, as since you played his tour game?
From the side of the player.
I have some thoughts on that.
Go, Dane.
I think what feels good playing a mystery is getting to use your abilities and stats instead of just, doing the murder mystery dinner
the
party.
Where you don't have any gameplay.
Yeah.
You just have accusations and denials.
Right.
Flying every which way.
Right.
And if it's a good one, then people are in character and saying believable things.
Right, which is fun. It can, it's not like a big bummer, but it's not the best role-playing experience because you have a character sheet with all these stats and abilities and equipment.
Right.
Right. So
what are these for if they're...
Right.
If I don't even look at it.
Which goes along with the...
Well, if you're in a pool, you don't need to look at it.
Well... fair enough, because it'd get wet.
Yeah, because... Well, we got... protective sheets. Okay. Anyways, that's a different episode.
The reason why it's a good, I think it's good practice to like make the players solving the mystery not like socially acceptable, so they got to sneak around and use unconventional means.
Mm.
They can't just go to the blood lab and be like, whose blood is this?
Right.
You know, they have to break into the blood lab track a wizard down in a
right. They gotta find someone who can do that part. And I think that part of a murder mystery or any sort of investigative story, like I think that's okay in a pen and paper setting. The players just need to know that's an option.
Yeah.
Because if like it never came up in the Torg thing that we did, and if we were doing it in a fantasy thing or whatever, just like. They got to know that, like, there's someone in town who you could, like, pay to do a little magic or do a little science and tell you a next thing about this, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But if, like, if that's not surfaced to the players, up front, they might not think about it, and then they'll find themselves in a place where, like, well, shit, we have this thing, and I don't know what... the next step is with it.
Is it, so you had like a clue, you said like a clue board type map, right? Like I feel like, don't make that face.
Guys, lock it up with the Facebook. This is an audio format.
Dane was doing a rude gesture.
That was not.
With like a like the board kind of set up, is it possible like there is sort of like a haberdashery, and they're like, wow, okay, this is a haberdashery. But then later you're like, the killer had a very special hat or whatever, and mm-hmm. you're like, hey, on this map there's a fucking haberdashery. Right. You know, the thing said.
A hat store.
A hat store. Let's go talk to the hat guy.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of... I mean, that just requires prep. Writing prep and, you know, maybe a nice map or something.
Sure.
Where we usually... We're landing... I'm landing exactly where we usually land.
Uh-oh.
Right? So, like, those two theories, Brian, that you talked about.
Yeah.
There's the, you know... have three ways to get each clue and like they all link up and whatever, that way you need all the clues and it makes a perfect picture versus give your player something to chew on and see what they spit out.
Yeah.
So probably best practice is somewhere in the middle where like you as a game master have an idea of, oh, this clue and this clue go together and that's going to lead the players to think of this, right? Take it to the blood lab. Oh, is there a wizard in town that we could take it to? That so like allowing for the players to insert stuff, come up with something. It's like I don't have a wizard character, you know, prepared, but that's a great idea.
Yeah.
And yes, and
to yes and that idea and be like, well, I didn't prep that, I didn't think of that. But now there is one.
Going she back looks to... just like that lady from CSI with the pigtails.
Are you talking about NCIS?
That's what I said. What did you say?
I think you said NCIS.
She looks just like Scully Mulder.
All right.
You're talking about the goth chick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the X-Files.
There was a,
in the X-Files.
In X-Files, yeah. There was a tweet that I saw a while ago. It was like someone's uncle texted them, is like, does ACAB include the goth chick from NCIS? He was like, unfortunately, yes. He was like, damn it.
Listen, a couple good ones are going to go down, you know?
Nope, it's all of them.
First they came for the goth chicks. And I
back on... our conversation.
Sorry, Dane.
Yeah.
I think a big pillar that could make mysteries work is like honoring the compact or the, you know, the Bushido code of players, you know, they understand that there's a mystery involved and they gotta solve it some sort of way. Mm-hmm. And like find clues and connect the clues, but also the game master allows for players to do it in their own time, in their own way, without being like, oh, well, no, you can't do that because I didn't plan for a wizard and that would kind of, you know, bypass...
Putting out a handful of clues and having there be a few different ways to find each one and for all of them to point, you know, towards the edge of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And then there being, you know, not a set right way to go from the clue... to the, you know, to the closer lead that gets you, you know, that gets you one step closer to the killer. And then, yeah, yes anding, essentially, and honoring their, you know, not having it set in stone in your mind or in your prep as a game master of, like, this is what you do with this clue in order to get the next step of it. But facilitating them... you know, what idea do you have to follow up with this?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, being like, yes, I'll put someone in here who, you know, could do that. Like, yeah, you're not official with the police department, so you can't just take it to the lab. But if someone's like, could I, you know, maybe my brother is a student at the university and we could get a similar test result. If we, you know, bribed him to do it for us.
You gotta bribe your brother.
Mm, maybe. I mean.
Yeah, sometimes.
Maybe he needs someone to, like, watch his cat when he goes out of town next week.
That's the bribe.
You know,
that's very good.
Very, you know, a low stakes bribe.
Low stakes bribe.
Do something about it.
Yeah.
And then also, like, the kind of allowing for, I guess, grace is the only word I can think of off the top of my head, but like sometimes your players will run into a dead end, and instead of like, oh, well, you guys just got to solve it, all the clues are out in front.
Yeah.
You know, the players should feel comfortable being like, okay, so what can we do with this? Yeah. What are the next steps? Mm-hmm. And like kind of above, you know, table out of character, just be like, we want to solve the mystery, but we're kind of stuck here.
Yeah.
Here's a tool for that, actually. And now that I'm thinking about it, I think I ran two other murder mysteries, but whatever.
You sandbag.
I know. Well, guys, I'm a bit of an expert when it comes to these.
Because I'm an expert on running a mystery.
So many bad murder mysteries. But one sort of like thing for that, where they get to a dead end, that's really good, I think, is having a moment that you know can happen at any point, like a trigger you can pull,
yeah,
where either like another person is killed.
I was just gonna say not exactly that, but that, yeah, like another person dies, or like, you know, someone leaves them a note.
Yes.
Someone else, another interested party comes forward, or another victim, and
yes,
that other victim, like, oh, it fits these, but it happened over here. And so, you know, you apply all the same logic, but over here, and now you have like 2 points that triangulate towards something where previously when you only had one data point, you were like, well, this could point any number of places.
Yeah.
But now the same thing happened over here and it points here.
Yeah.
Really great.
And it's helpful to have those in your back pocket before you start.
Yeah.
Rather than sort of scrambling in the middle of it to be like, okay, fuck, like they're way off. A body falls out of the sky in front of you.
That's a very good one, and one that we should probably put on the board, specifically since we're talking about murder mysteries, is like, there's been another body.
Mm-hmm.
Classic, you know, detective show, detective novel,
sure,
formula. There's been another body, and it was maybe someone you already talked to.
Yeah.
And I
would say it doesn't even have to be another body, but
yeah,
like, another attempt was made,
yeah,
or like, you know,
mm-hmm,
another, you know, the killer strikes again,
right,
kind of deal.
Same method, same guy probably, mm-hmm, but this guy survived and now you got someone to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
They do that thing too in some of those shows where like it's like a botched murder,
mm-hmm,
and the guy's in like a coma or something, mm-hmm, right, and they're just like waiting,
you gotta
for
keep
to
him
wake
under
up
guard at the hospital.
Yeah that could be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun.
Because they might come back and finish the job and you're waiting for him to wake up because,
yeah,
he can solve the mystery if he wakes up and can tell you what happened. But what if he has amnesia?
Oh, right, shit.
So you gotta be solving the mystery and just keeping that guy safe.
Yeah.
So you split
the
party.
But then that's the same thing. That's the same thing as like another interested party or informer comes forward.
So you split the
There's
party.
A second
one of them
body
stays there protecting the guy all session and doesn't do anything.
You give him a crossword.
Or the first victim wakes up and now like, okay, great, we gotta go talk to the first.
Yeah.
We gotta go talk to the first guy. He probably knows something. He probably saw something,
yeah,
when it happened.
He speaks a different language. Now you gotta go find a guy.
You get a translator.
Yep.
What would you guys think about, like, for the setup of the, or the, I guess, logistics of running it, is like suspect cards that the players can like hold on to and see.
Mm.
And then like that way they can, you know,
like board gamifying it,
yeah,
a little bit, where like, you know, here, like you have like 10 cards basically,
mm-hmm,
that you've made, you've prepped, and you know, 3 of them are suspects and the rest of them are evidence items,
mm-hmm,
and they can, you know, they can do their red yarn board with them. And all of them are, you know, I think it's a good idea because it kind of like, it makes the stuff finite in a way where in a real investigation, there's a lot of things that you might look at and you might waste some time looking at,
mm-hmm,
before you realize that they don't matter.
Yeah.
But going back to the idea that like, if there's a clue to find and you go to the place and you say you investigate and look for clues, here's the clue, and tell them a little bit about it, and now they're holding on to a physical thing that they know is one of the clues.
Something I read in that vein, it might have been on that same Alexandrian website or a different one, because I was scrambling for information since you guys hadn't made this episode yet. really wishing you had, because now I got a bunch of better ideas. But one suggestion was to create a table of suspects. And then, so on the like X, what am I saying? The left side of the table, all the suspect names. And then across the columns, it's like means,
motive,
and opportunity.
Yeah.
And so all of them have at least one of the thing, but only the killer has all three things. Mm-hmm. And so like in the like suggestion of like the cards,
yeah.
You don't put that obviously on the card, but you would then have like the information needed to like present that.
Yeah.
Excuse me, as like the people discover like the different things.
That feels like a good way if I was writing it to start.
Right.
Is like, you know, you come up with the idea for the mystery, you come up with the situation and the setting, and you're like, all right, well, these are the NPCs involved, and I know one of them, you know, one of them is the victim and one of them is the perpetrator, one of them is the murderer, and the other ones are this. And I think the other thing to add to that would be a last column, which is like what's the lead they give you when you go, you know, do the Law and Order thing, and they're like
moving boxes
while they talk to the detectives.
Yeah.
And you get the thing from them where like they absolutely had motive. They hated this guy, but I was at work. Talk to my buddy. Talk to my supervisor. I was here.
Yeah.
Hauling boxes. I was moving boxes like how I do.
And when they get to that side, I go over there and I move them back over. Boxes. It's honest work.
Pays the bills. And so, it's a living. But then there should be another thing. He should drop something.
Yeah.
What is the thing says? You know, so four things: means, motive, opportunity,
lead.
What is the tasty little thing that he drops that points you towards something else?
And then that wraps really nicely back into like the three ways to find a clue thing of like, you can check on that table.
Yeah.
You know, do I have
one of the ways to get almost every clue is talk to one of these people.
Yeah.
It'll give you one of those clues.
Yeah. And you may already have the clue, but then you go talk to the box guy and he's like, yeah, my supervisor was sick that day. Like, oh shit. That lines up with like what we already discovered, which was the supervisor hates.
And that either like strongly indicates one of these other NPCs, or it exonerates both of these guys.
That's
and
right.
You're like, great, we don't need to talk about that
That's
anymore.
Right.
It's down to these two.
That's right. I have a curious that's back to something we talked about long ago. Is that okay to do?
Yeah.
Okay. You, Dane, after you made that horrible gesture, said something about what feels good for the players is being able to use skills and abilities. So I think like what I'm hearing right now is like a bunch of wonderful ideas, but I'm still sort of stuck with, so how do I engage those abilities, or like beyond sort of just like roll a perception, roll investigation, like, you know, like what, how do I, and maybe the answer is a system, but like, how do I incorporate skills into?
I have an answer for that.
Well, I was asking
you, don't,
Dane,
but it's not a.
He's making
well, I think he should say. I think he should say his answer, because my answer is kind of a sidestep of what you're asking, but it is something that I wanted to come back to.
A sidestep.
Okay. Well, do you want to go first?
You guys gonna bump into each other?
Yeah. Well, I try to answer and then save my sidestep for later in the episode.
Great clip.
So using skills and abilities, I think for the most part, at least the mainstream games like D&D, they're all combat. All the interesting stuff is like combat and like sans wizards, I guess,
it's
right?
It's action focused and a little bit like espionage focused, but espionage and crime solving are not necessarily the same thing. Like there's sneaking or like movement abilities. That's not, most of the abilities are action oriented.
Yeah. So I think how you get those involved is setting. So, like, you know, being in a big town, like, I don't know, for example, D&D, Baldur's Gate, where they have their own crime
Baldur's
force
Gate 3.
Shit.
Well, you're in Baldur's right. Gate 3, the town.
You're in the Baldur's town. Gate 3.
The good one.
Ooh, a lot of people be real mad because a lot of people like Baldur's Gate 2.
Yeah, I know, but yeah, I tried to play it. It just, like, it's a good video game for when it came out. It suffers from a lot of just technical limitations.
Sure. Anyways, so you're in Baldur's Gate.
Well, 3. So I think that's a bad setting for role-playing mystery, murder mystery, because you can't just go start a combat everywhere. Like, you would have to, the game master would have to set up very specific things, like, oh, we're in the slums, and, like, you get a, you jumped in the alley, and you can fight back.
Yeah.
But then you gotta run away, because, you know, you just killed some people, so, right. You know, murder. more murder.
Somebody else has to solve that one.
Yeah. So, like, being on a ship, like, that's a great setting.
Thank you.
Because you can have combats that not necessarily relate to the murder, but are just happening around. Like, for example, a different pirate ship attacks your crew's pirate ship while they're trying to solve the mystery.
Yeah.
And, like, you know.
Or a sea monster.
Or a sea monster, or, like, a storm happens.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're dealing with an action...
Right, some sort of
action sequence. Where like, physical and mental decisions are about that, and your abilities could play into it.
But that is that your sidestep?
No.
Okay.
That was my...
I'm not criticizing.
Earnest answer to how do you incorporate ability and stats into the mystery solving is... They're not actually used to solve the mystery. They're used to survive long enough to solve the mystery.
Ooh, that's cool. I like that.
Mm.
That's really cool.
Used to keep you alive long enough to get to it. That's pretty good.
Because also there's like that trope of like you get too close to solving the mystery and then suddenly you're getting attacked by some mysterious figure or whatever, right?
That's a little bit what my sidestep of your question is that specifically in this example where we're doing where we're using a game system like D&D, but this session is all about a murder mystery and you're not really getting to do it. You know, in real life, once they get all the evidence, they arrest the guy. Sometimes they arrest him before they have all the evidence and, you know, hope that they're gonna find it or, you know, whatever. But This is fiction and this is gameplay. I think a great way to then still to, you know, go back to playing the game you're actually playing after you've spent all this time not really playing D&D, but playing solve a murder, playing detective, is to solve it in a way where, like, oh, we can't arrest him and take him to jail. The true perpetrator, like Minority Report, the true perpetrator is a guy in power, or like in D&D, the true perpetrator is the evil baron who wanted this to go down this way and did it on purpose and laid a bunch of false leads, and you figured it out because you knew something, you know, smelled about this case.
Yeah.
But this guy's not going to jail, and so now you're back playing D&D where there's a bad guy you gotta go take down, and...
So we did bump into each other.
That
was also my sidestep.
Was that your sidestep?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. I'm glad I got to be the one to say it, but I did think we might be leaning that way.
You guys can't see it.
It was too long.
When they bumped into each other, they almost kissed. It was pretty cool. It's pretty hot. No, actually, that's...
And I think the real answer is, you know, if you're... I'm good. Thank you. I think the real answer is if you're going hard on the idea of a murder mystery is to run a game system that supports that versus a game system where, you know, someone's like, why didn't I get to cast Fireball? Why didn't I get to swing my big axe?
Yeah.
But I, you know, if that's what you're doing, that's what people want to play, well then, you know, do the sidestep. Which it sounds like is almost what you did, because when on the ship thing, you know, you said you kind of got into a corner where the evidence was pointing towards something better, but you had already set it up that someone was going to be the betrayer and be the bad guy at the end of it once they solved it.
Right.
And you enter combat, and now it ends with a action sequence.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But, and, like, in that setting, I think, at the time I was like, well, there's nothing on the ship that could be like the, they get too close to the mystery and someone attack. But then you're like, oh, a pirate ship rolls up while they're trying to like, mm-hmm. or a sea monster. I'm like, oh, fuck, of course. Like, where was this episode a month ago? Fuck.
Well, time's a flat circle, so.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll come. I'm sure you'll run another murder mystery
in a pool
for an engagement party or whatever.
It was a birthday party.
Birthday party.
Yeah. I hope not.
So, to frame the sidestep a little bit better, it changes what the mystery is. The party knows who did it. Or yeah. who orchestrated it.
Right, like we
who
solved
the bad guy
it.
Is.
We've won okay. mystery.
Once they've solved it, not from the beginning.
Early on, they figure out who it is. And then the mystery becomes, how do we...
Yeah, it becomes a different thing.
How do we serve justice?
Yeah.
But what's to stop them from just being like, well, let's go to the guy's house and kick his ass?
He's not at his house, you gotta track him down.
I see. Mm-hmm. Now there's another mystery.
Or you gotta come up with
the shape of the mystery
or, you know,
changed.
Like
that. Oh, well, where's he gonna be? And now we're solving a mystery of like essentially planning a heist, but instead of doing a heist movie where mm-hmm. you just cut back to all the planning that happened off screen, you're doing the legwork of planning a heist, which is investigative.
Yeah. It could also be working backwards of like, we know this guy did it, he hid all the evidence, so now we gotta, you know, the cops are like, we have two suspects and we're gonna hang them both. And you're like, well, let's make sure we hang the right guy.
Yeah.
And so then you just like, you go backwards. Instead of working forwards of like, who did it, you find how he did it. Or she, murderers can be she's.
Historically, much less often.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Statistically,
But in my fantasy, sex fantasy, she did it.
That goth girl with the pigtails did it.
She did it.
But anyways, you work backwards, and so you like know the starting point and the, you know, the guilty party, and you gotta put together the means, the motive, the opportunity.
Much like the podcast I was telling you guys about off mic, which was like, that's the whole crux of it. Like, they're at the crime scene, everything's there, and the magic handcuffs only work once they've established the means, motive, and opportunity.
Mm.
Like, the guest on the show, it's Gumshoes and Dragons. The guest, it's not as good as this podcast. The guest on the show is always the murderer, or usually the murderer. And the people who are playing know that. So what they're not trying to figure out who did it. They're trying to figure out how they did it.
It's kind of like a meta foregone conclusion. Who did? Sometimes in a TV show too, or you know, you're like, well, he did it. Look at him.
Yeah. Ooh, right. Let's be careful.
Or like in like
a
show, you know, you see the murder happen. So you as the viewer,
some murder mystery shows are presented that way, where you see everything that happened in the moment of the crime, and so it's not a mystery at all on the part of the viewer what happened or when or who done it. It's about proving it, which is also, you know, the basis of good legal systems. Is like, you could all know who did it, but the system only works if it's proven.
Then we get back in your guys' trial episode where you run like a whole court drama.
Yeah.
And that could be a little Law and Order one shot, dude. Oh,
which we
shit.
We never did.
Yeah,
we
I don't think we ever really, like, ran the courtroom.
Well, we're going to do it in pool park, or,
pool park.
Pina Colada Berg.
Yeah.
We were going to do it, and then it blew up.
It blew up. I blew up. I ruined the game for everybody.
All right, something we haven't talked about. Hold on.
Eggs. No,
eggs.
Shit, we've talked about eggs.
Red herrings, misdirects, twists.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you've said a couple times, both of you, I have all these clues and my players won't even find them. I think with my thought around red herrings is players will organically create them on their own.
Yeah.
And that Alexandrian article I was reading strongly advised against him for that reason. like make your clues attainable in these three different ways, mm-hmm. and avoid presenting them with things that
players will think of the wrong thing
and follow it, you know,
without any prompting from you.
100%.
I also think the concept of a red herring is a little bit built into that that little like chart matrix,
right?
That we discussed right. earlier, where you know, there's a set amount of suspects and then means, motive, opportunity. Opportunity, it, like, there's red herrings inherent in that. If like four of the witnesses or four of the possible suspects had opportunity, like four of them were there in a time frame that works for the murder, so that is red herrings. And then it's just like, it's the investigative work of talking to them and being like, yes, I had the opportunity, but I didn't have the others.
Yeah.
That, you know, it solves the problem of red herrings being there. But I think what we're talking about is not necessarily that, because that's more about the structure of like how you should build this in a good way to just like keep some boundaries on the concept of a murder mystery session. I think what we're talking about more specifically is a thing placed there deliberately to lead you to a dead end. Or to lead the investigators, the party, to a dead end. And that's what you shouldn't put, according to...
the Alexandrian.
Yeah.
Can I tell you a little fun, like, just quick aside? My buddy Rourke will cling on to a red herring and ride it all the way to the ground until it explodes, and then sift through the pieces to figure out what the actual mystery is. So this is another murder mystery that I remember that I ran for his birthday. I know he does this, so I put in there a red scrunchie that like was found somewhere or whatever and seemed important. And so he like chased it. And he took it to a guy and the guy was like, well, it's a red hair ring.
Fucking got him.
And Rourke was still like, all right, okay. So we got to look for somebody with long hair. And I was like, no, Rourke, listen, no, listen what I'm
it's
saying.
It's a pun. It's and a, you solved you, it. Yeah. You solved it. And that's the end of it is it was a pun.
And after we finished and they solved the mystery, it went actually pretty well. Rourke was still like, but what was the deal with the scrunchie?
I was fucking with you, man.
Buddy. Can I talk to you in the hall real quick?
I think that is, in general, pretty good advice. Unless you're going to do that and you know exactly what your player's going to do with it. And it's going to, you know, they're going to run it into the ground for a joke. The concept of putting something unrelated and being like, you know, here's a clue, and you know, because you created the adventure, that this clue leads to nowhere. Just don't put that clue there. Only, like, what we talked about, you know, give them the clues, or have them be, you know, three different ways to find a clue, if you're not just going to give them a clue for free for going to the right place.
Mm-hmm. All right, Cosmo.
Don't ever have that clue be a thing that you know leads in the wrong direction, because just like the philosophically we're all kind of in agreement about the way players will treat something like that, and that they will make that out of a good clue. They will go the wrong direction out of a good clue,
right,
without any help from you. Or without any, like, misdirection from you. They will misdirect themselves.
100%. Although, we also, early on, I think in our own different, like, ways, expressed a concern of, like, if I make the clues too easy, they'll solve it too quick. Which I don't know if it's true or not, because as a player myself, I think players are just dumb, right?
true.
They're just dumb because they don't know everything
they don't know what you know.
And I think writing something, knowing everything you know, inherently makes you feel like, well, they'll know or whatever, right? But could a red herring, I'm just asking genuinely, could a red herring be a parachute of like, oh, fuck, they're like speed running this thing. I've got this red herring in my back pocket.
Okay, yeah.
Now it's time to fucking
and be like,
rip
yeah,
the cord.
At the second crime scene, you know,
there's a red scrunchie
and it seems important, and it yeah just to like fill up the time for the session.
I don't know if that sucks or not, but
I don't know either, actually. Like,
I would say
part of me feels like it feels disingenuous, and like, why are you padding your time? If they solve it quickly, like, shouldn't they be rewarded for their clever investigative work? But then also, what do you do for the rest of the session?
You make faces, right, Dave?
Yeah. You just sit there making faces. We might need to take a couple minutes to clarify terms.
Okay.
So I think what you were describing, Brian, would be a better term for that would be like a misdirect or false information.
Cool.
Mm.
Where they're solving it too quickly and you want to slow them down because it's a one shot.
Mm.
Right. And so like,
you haven't made it to the pool yet.
So you select a piece of information that they like already had and like, oh yeah, this thing, you know, we know that, you know, the box worker didn't actually have that shift that he said. He lied. So he probably did it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, fuck. Well, that's true. He did do it. Okay. Turns out he didn't go to his shift, but like he went to his sister in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to share that because it was embarrassing and like personal information.
He didn't clock out.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to get in trouble at work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
right.
That actually
so you
is
made it a lie.
Going back to just like detective television episodes, that's a pretty common thing to be like, we fucking got him, to the, you know, the red herring. We got him. We know because his story is falling apart based on additional information.
Mm.
But then you get the truth out of him and the truth is that he is guilty of something, but it's different and less and unrelated, or maybe even still criminal. And you're like, well, okay.
He put his sister in the hospital.
Yeah, like, we're going to follow up on that.
Yeah.
You're a bad dude.
Yeah.
But that's not what we're...
But you're not going to go down for murder.
Yeah. You're not going down for this murder. And you wasted our time a little bit. We got to hustle and get back to it. And there is drama in that, because that's also, you know, like, in a psych episode, that's where you get the call from the chief that there's been another body.
Right. When they're chasing...
Yeah, when they chase the wrong thing.
Yeah. Yeah, shit, that's good. Well, so then that makes me feel like the answer isn't having a red herring, it's having that matrix.
Yeah.
And then those things kind of, like we were saying, like the characters sort of follow those things and you have the reason for, or you come up with the reason for why that guy's at the hospital and not guilty of like the murder, but
yeah,
he's got a weird pig fetish.
I think it also depends on the context of the role playing, the meta of it is like, is it a one shot? Is it a one shot within an adventure? Is this like the next piece of the adventure? Because if it's going to continue, I think solving it quickly and easily is no
perfectly
problem.
Fine. Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, you bashed that out in half a session. Great.
I got more.
Now we're going after, you know, this goes all the way to the top. You get to now follow up on that.
And if it ends in sort of like a big combat or something, then that becomes a time suck, especially if you're playing D&D.
But if it's a one shot and a standalone one shot with, you know, with no other context and no plans to continue it and no, you know, other sessions that led up to it, it could be pretty underwhelming, disappointing for your players. Be like, oh, well, that was fucking easy.
Mm-hmm. And because I think, you know, to bring back your first, your experience with the boat, which turned out not to be your only experience. I was trying to work that into it.
Get him.
But the...
Oh, no. I also ran a murder mystery with you guys. Do you remember we did?
The D&D.
That's right.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
The more I think about it, the more I'm like...
You've done a few of these?
I've done a lot of these really badly. Poorly.
But anyway, so the... So, like, the you had one of the player characters who was the monster, and, like, that's how the session was going to end, and the players kind of figured out a different answer to the mystery. And then you kind of just said, well...
I forgot the structure of that was a murder mystery, and we were talking to our, like, most... viable suspect and not getting anything, then we burn down his house.
yeah, that's 100% what happened. Yeah,
sure did.
And that one shot took like 5-6 sessions too. So a lot of things went wrong, but I think you guys did solve the mystery at the end. That was a one shot I ran from a module. Mm. I still think it's a very good module. I would run it very differently now if sure. I did it again. But Dane, what you're saying is like,
I was going to ask, assuming your players enjoyed it.
Yeah, they said they did. You can't trust them.
You can't trust them.
You can't fucking trust them.
So I think for one shots, the kind of changing things up to like, you know, make it last the full time. That way, you know, you don't end early. And just like, as long as it has a semi satisfying conclusion, it doesn't really matter how good of investigators they were.
That's right.
Right? You know, have fun.
That's right.
That's what yeah, I'm
that's
say. As long as everybody
yeah,
has
yeah,
fun.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it was a perfect mystery.
And so in that context, with one shot, it's less important to solve it at all. It's less important to, you know, mm-hmm. follow investigative procedure correctly. It's more important that they do dumb shit like that. That
yeah.
they, you know, that they follow red herrings, that they, you know, get real rough interrogating the wrong guy, and then they're like, oh no, it's too late. We're on the wrong side of town and there's been another murder and we're... It's because it's fun to do that shit.
Okay, so this is good because this is something I wanted to bring up. This leads me into like... So I asked about the player experience. As a GMDM, PPM, I feel like running a murder mystery is stressful.
Okay.
Or I mean, maybe stressful is an exaggeration, but there's a lot of moving parts to keep track of, and making sure that they're hitting all the things while dealing with the chaos of the players and stuff. And I felt like for me, it's easy to get lost in the weeds of what you're doing, and exactly what you just said, Dane, lose sight of like, I'm just doing this so like my buddies can have fun in the pool on a Sunday or whatever, mm-hmm. right? And also I could have fucking just had the monster just be a monster and just yes anded their conclusion on the murder. Fuck, where was this episode a month ago?
It's right here, buddy.
Right here.
Yeah, it was right
circle.
Here in the future.
Flat fucking circle. But yeah, I don't not enjoy doing it, but it's not a way in which I, because like my prep for like a normal session is very sort of like, I have these big pieces that I know exist, and then I tether them to like what happens in the session.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a murder mystery asks you to create a lot of small pieces and big pieces, and then also incorporate the chaos of the session to tie all of that together. And it's a lot of spinning plates for me.
It is definitely a different type of game mastering, because there is that secret answer, you know, the secret board.
Put the board on the board.
Where like it needs, which is why I bring back the setting thing I touched on, because like in a big city like Baldur's Gate
3.
There's a whole city happening in the world, and like you have to come up with all this shit, and they're like, well, let's go, you know, we're tired of door knocking, so let's go find a pub. And you're like, okay, fuck, well, now I gotta come up with a pub that has nothing to do with the mystery, and I gotta keep all the mystery and the murderer,
that's right,
you know, spinning.
Mm-hmm.
So now I gotta add a new plate of the pub.
Yep.
So like, yeah, trying to keep it contained, like on the ship. How is that to the stress that you just expressed, the stress that you experienced, how was that on the
well they
ship?
Immediately spread out across the
ship.
So
classic.
Like that, yeah, and I was running for like 8 people, which is way too many fucking people, but I can't say no because that's the people who
yeah.
are also at the birthday party, right?
Yeah.
But it's like that, like the kind of like what you're saying, like there wasn't a pub there, but it's like, okay, well they're gonna talk to the cook or whatever. And I have like these things that the cook is going to say, but meanwhile, someone's rummaging mm-hmm. through the captain's quarters. It's like, okay, well, fuck. Like now I have to remember like what they found in the captain's quarters, because this was a tie to that clue. And like,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to, now I'm feeling like I'm giving too much away when I say this thing, but that's the point of what I'm supposed to be doing. And like, it's just a lot of like in the moment sort of like bookkeeping,
mm-hmm.
For me at least. And like I said, like I'll recognize that like it's not a way that I normally run a game. So for me, it feels very difficult. For folks who like are prep heavy, maybe this is just sort of like a Tuesday for them.
Sure. You know, being able to fall back on your notes and be like, okay, you're talking to the cook here, pull out my cook sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, and then like you say the line or whatever, and then, okay, you're rummaging the captain's quarters, pull out my captain quarters sheet, you know, rather than, you know, having it all up in your noggin.
Yeah. And I just sort of assumed, and I think if I gave myself a grade, I'd say like a C plus B minus. Like I assumed like, okay, like if I know what I have, like the information mm-hmm. I have to give, like I had a checklist of just like, I showed it to you guys of like, mm-hmm. these are the things that are important. And I like color coded them.
And without knowing at least most of these things, there's no reasonable way for them to.
Right. And so like, I knew,
to draw the right conclusion.
Exactly. And I knew like, for example, like the journal was going to have very specific information in it, but like, other information they could get from the cook or from the first mate or from whatever, it would just kind of come up in conversation. Cause again, that's sort of how I just do stuff, whatever.
Hmm.
But the problem that created was like, it just was sort of like a lot, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like, okay, fuck. I had to like look at my sheet again and be like, all right, I haven't told them yet about like the, you know, yarn or whatever. So like, okay, they're talking to the cook. Okay. So now I have to like ham fist yarn into the conversation, right? And they're in a kitchen. How the fuck does that make
yeah.
sense, right?
Yeah, and so it wasn't originally related to this, but we had a conversation about Brackenwalds and how that's just a really good setting to adventure in, because
yeah.
there's no natural splits of the party, because like in a town or just in a more freeform mm-hmm. role-playing setting, you know, so it could be on the ship, it's
yeah.
like there's no immediate danger, there's no immediate reason we all eight of us have
yeah.
to go
always
talk to
have
cook.
To be in the same cabin
yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah.
doing the same thing.
So like, you know, it's well, because one, it's just realistic, if you have a group of eight and
yeah.
a mystery to solve, you're going to split up, because
right
that's just how you do things.
The
yeah.
police department doesn't send all the detectives. to the same
that
thing.
That would be
See?
Wild.
That's great, because that highlights the ridiculousness of it.
Yeah,
right.
yeah.
Like, that would be an insane thing.
Just eight
like,
gumshoes
yeah.
were like, her legs were as long as the day.
Yeah.
Her legs were as long as the week. Her legs were as long as the month. We get it, she had legs.
Don't you have other crimes to investigate? Why are you all here?
But even with, okay, so then even with like four people though, that's an issue, right?
Yeah.
And so back to what you've been saying again and again and again,
and
it's
it
like
does
setting, right?
The like when you brought up the idea of the matrix of like, here's, you know, 4 to 10 possible, you know, NPCs, and only one of them is the one with all three. In any, you know, Call of Cthulhu, a modern, you know, detective show, a D&D adventure in Baldur's Gate, whatever, like, you're right. It makes no sense for the whole party to always be going to everybody, and then you've made yourself a bit of a problem, because it makes a lot of sense that if, you know, if the first couple clues give you three different people to look up, why would you go to them one at a time,
yeah.
all of you together.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense to split the party. And splitting the party is a harder game to run and takes some of the fun out of it for whoever's turn it isn't.
Okay, but I did put them in initiative.
Mm.
So they got like a thing to do, and then
I think that might be the answer to something like that, because you kind of do want them to split up.
Yeah.
Or, and they would, if they're taking it seriously, they would naturally want to divide and conquer and split their resources. So putting it in a sort of like mock combat initiative order, or doing something like the, you know, the Shadow Dark dungeon turn where,
right.
You know, this, we're not in combat right now, but there's like a meta turn order still happening. And then, yeah, blink between the scenes a little more quickly, and with some structure. Probably a pretty good idea to come up with something like that.
Well, the goal you get from that, though, is, like, challenging as it is then you get to bring everyone back together and have that role-play moment of, like...
What'd you learn?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I learned this.
Exactly. Exactly. And even, like, out of initiative, someone who was in another room would hear the thing, like, you know, above table that someone was saying, be like, oh, shit, okay, like, you know, like, mm-hmm. whatever, whatever, like...
But if they're playing it well, they won't act on it until their characters yes. didn't have a chance to talk about
that's
it.
That's right.
And then, yeah, there is some gold there in the opportunity for role-playing, in sharing information in character.
Yes. But it requires sort of that commitment to, like, and these are a lot of new players, so, like, I didn't, like, you know, hold it.
Push that too
someone
hard.
Someone was like, yeah. oh, now I'm going to ask the cook about, like, whatever, mm-hmm. what, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which, again, is fine.
You wouldn't hurt that.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
wait.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that moment, like in every, like, Knives Out or, you know, in Agatha Christie or Sherlock Holmes where he's got everybody
when he brings
in the room,
the, yeah,
that's
when he brings everybody together.
Nah, and I didn't get
and
a full one of those.
Didn't
but.
Make sense until one thing and then mm-hmm. ask that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't know how attainable that moment actually is in a role-playing game.
It
but...
would be a fun moment to try and push if you got to a point where, like, you had three suspects, and because I've never seen this on, like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, get all three suspects in the same room and interview them at the same time and see, you know, if they were in the same space mm-hmm. and, like, if the bad guys or the, you know, the suspects are in the same place and only one of them's a bad guy, but they're playing off each other. That's, I've never seen that before.
Kind of like a Usual Suspect sort of. No, because I guess that's not... In the lineup, I'm thinking where they're all sort of like... But that's not exactly what you're saying.
Right.
It's just the only movie reference I had. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I think in a role-playing setting, that can be fun. I don't think we see it because it is not best practices.
Oh, the,
you know?
The problem with that practice is you have all your players on, you know, one side of the table pointing at you, and you're playing three or four suspects in the same moment, and that's
you start doing the same accent for all three of them.
that's a lot of computing power to run that simulation.
Yes, it is. I try to avoid having several NPCs together for that reason mm-hmm. of just like, and then it becomes the me show of like mm-hmm. you know, which I still do, but
it is. Yeah, whenever I don't think about that and I've accidentally set up a scene where I've got two or three NPCs opposite the players at the same time, I'm like, well, fuck. I end up leaving one or two of them out completely, and then I think, like, well, one of them would have said this at this point, and that sucks.
The worst is when they make them talk to each other. You're like, no, because now I'm just doing a scene by myself.
I kind of like that, though, because
as a game
I like
master,
having fun, too.
I do like
That's
having
fair.
Fun, too.
That's
and,
fair.
You know, some people are really great at it. That's something Brennan Lee Mulligan does really well.
Yeah.
And, you know, play like six NPCs in a scene and bounce them off each other and then bounce them off his players. He's very good at that. But
you think he practices his like NPCs?
I wonder.
I think he just rips them off the dome.
Do you guys?
In like my head.
Yeah. Or sometimes if there's like a line I for sure want to deliver, mm-hmm. I think about like, well, how am I going to get this in there?
Mm-hmm.
And run little like fake conversations. But I don't ever like rehearse, you know, what it would be like if three of my NPCs were talking to each other and the players weren't even there or something.
Yeah.
You know, that's. That'd be the behavior of an insane person.
There's a fine line.
Yeah.
It's a fine line.
Should we wrap up mysteries? We kind of...
I think so.
Solved this one.
I'll say, just like, in conclusion for me, coming out of this, I thought a lot about what I have experienced before. I also thought a little bit about the mystery element for the next lock-in that I'm going to run, which is not going to be a murder mystery, but there is going to be some like stuff to kind of solve. and some things that we discussed here feel very like they're going to be very helpful. And I'm thinking of a version of that like matrix of means, motive, opportunity, but for a thing that hasn't happened yet. Because what I'm kind of planning is that like you guys are going to have to figure out what's going on and stop something bad from happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be like, oh, some guy's dead and you need to figure out who done it. But I think the principles of mystery solving are going to still apply. And that feels like it's going to be very helpful. And kind of like what you were talking about, your instinct is to just, you know, like wing stuff. And I feel like that's very easy when you're playing week to week or maybe several weeks between sessions. It's very easy to like think about stuff in between and then improv. You only have to be prepped, you know, one session in advance ever at any given time.
It's nice.
But for the lock-in, I'm going to need to be much more locked in with my prep.
Hey. Put that on the board.
And yeah, discussing the way we find clues, the way we give clues to our players and what they lead to, and that matrix idea of, you know, these are people of interest, but how interesting? And, you know, when you talk to them, you find out how much, and also they should lead you to something else.
Yeah.
So I feel like I've got stuff to chew on, and it's going to be helpful in my prep.
I feel like, because I might or may not have a murder mystery coming up, and my thoughts for it are sort of using the murder mystery not as like necessarily like as the focal point, but sort of the wax on wax off is like it's a vessel for movement and exploration, and then sort of getting at like kind of, I think both of you have said this, like what's the bigger thing behind it that regardless of how the mystery goes, I'm not hanging my hat or my like success fail on did the mystery get solved well, but did it sort of get me to this next step that I'm, or like the end step that I'm trying to get my group to, and then remembering to have fun while I'm doing it.
Remember, it's supposed to be fun. It's
supposed to be fun.
My takeaways from this conversation would be to think critically about what exactly I'm trying to do. Is the purpose of the session to solve a mystery, or is the purpose that there is a mystery and engage with like mechanics? So like the mystery is more of a vehicle for the gameplay. Because I think if the purpose is to solve a mystery, you really gotta kind of gamify it, hack it, unless you're using a very specific system.
Right.
Call of Cthulhu, we talked about, don't know much about it, but like something like that. But if you're just playing in D&D, you need to come up with some mini games. Mm. If it's about solving the mystery.
Yeah.
You know, if it's about putting the pieces of the puzzle together. But if it's just like, yeah, here's a fun story, you know, that we get to play around in with the mechanics, then it's probably going to be something much more like, you know, who done it, but how do you serve them justice?
Yeah.
Or, you know,
how do you find them? They disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
I dig. All right. Does that feel good? All right, well, then that'll do it for this episode of Two-Headed Game Master. As always, we live on Patreon now, so head over to 2hgm.com. Or no, that's not what we're doing. Head over to patreon.com/2hgm, where you can, you know, find all our stuff, follow us for free, join our Discord, get involved, listen to episodes, talk about episodes. Tell us what episodes you want us to do.
I
want to
talk more about episodes of the Discord. I'm not doing that enough.
The people in the Discord, I think...
are awful.
You might be the only one who listens to the show in the Discord. The rest of them are friends of the show who sometimes come on episodes.
Sure.
But don't listen to the show.
That's fine. I'll just yell into the void.
Yeah. You know, what else? Well, thank you, Brian, for running a murder mystery and thinking about it and then joining us on the show. We'd love to have you.
Thank you guys for having me. I wish I could do 12 more of these. And thank you for doing this after I did the thing that I needed your help with. It's very good.
I'm sure it'll help all of us with the next one now.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever the next thing for either, any of us ends up being.
That'll be comforting when I can't sleep later.
Well, if you need some white noise, just turn on an episode of 2HDM.
Fucking... No better sleep aid, am I right?
All right, that time the face made sense. Wasn't so crude that
it's
time.
Just my face.
It's just face. As always, thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pondhilla's Finest as the intro and outro to our show. And we'll see you on the next one.
See you next time.
Bye.